Professors FM.
Analytics with Mike Lewis, the podcast where we talk about everything you need to know about sports analytics. Here's your host, Mike Lewis, marketing professor at Emory University.
Welcome, everyone. Fanalytics podcast with Mike Lewis and Doug Battle, brought to you by the Emory Marketing Analytics Center. Doug, this morning, I think, is going to be an interesting conversation. It may well be we're taping this at 9:03 a.m. on August 10th. By the time this airs on August 11th, the conversation may be completely outdated. But as of this moment, the college football season is on the edge, let's say.
Yeah. Yesterday, Sunday, there were some leaks that officials had made a decision and that we would find out this week that the season is being canceled. The internet went into complete chaos. Let me preface that by saying last week, in a completely different kind of vibe, we had the coaches poll released and then the NCAA canceling Division II and III sports and then the college football playoff schedule released, as well as the SEC opponents list, like the essentially the schedule without the dates for the SEC season. So last week it was everything was kind of being unveiled as if there were going to be a season. And then this weekend we find out that allegedly a decision's been made to cancel it altogether. A lot of chatter there. And now we've got Trevor Lawrence leading a pack of NCAA players that are essentially revolting against this decision being made for them as they want to make a decision themselves.
Okay, so this is a complicated conversation to this is a complicated issue to address, especially in a relatively short time. On things like this, I tend to come back to, let's call it first principles. So looking at the incentives, the preferences of the various stakeholders involved in the college, well, in any system, but in this case, in the college sports system. And I think that's, you know, that's the way you got to take these things apart to make it, to have it make sense. You know, I've listened to some, you know, some of the talking heads going off on this stuff, and it ends up being, let's say, not a great conversation because it ends up sort of just devolving into conversations, almost like more emotional conversations. Mm-hmm. I hear some people talking about a lack of leadership because these guys seem wishy-washy. Perhaps the appearance of a lack of concern for the playoffs. If you're going to have the athletes on campus and playing games while the vast majority of other students are taking classes in a remote location. And so it becomes a conversation that's sort of impossible to track. When I think about these things, I'm going to say, hey, you know, who are the various parties involved? And, you know, there's a bunch of them, right? You've got, and I like how you laid out the summary of this because you've got the players, you've got the individual schools, you've got the leagues, you got the university presidents. You have the fans, and in fact, you've got the TV network, and you've got the bowl games. So there's a lot to take apart here.
Yeah, and I'm reading that yesterday, Trevor Lawrence held a Zoom meeting with prominent student athletes at a number of schools, including Justin Fields at Ohio State, to discuss kind of their strategy moving forward in this, and have since released a statement. I think it's like We Are United, making demands as far as the treatment they want, as far as their health is concerned, in a protocol for returning to football, and also wanting to start a players union or a players association, which seems like a college football nightmare for the NCAA.
Yeah, it's one of the things that's definitely come out of this, and I think, you know, we can't look at sports in isolation. There's the social movements, and, you know, let's call it sort of the the standard narrative at this point, the social justice or the social movements. And part of that has given additional power to players across all the leagues. Ranging from in the professional leagues, it used to be the idea that you can't take a knee on the sideline, or one of the point of views was you can't take a knee on the sideline because that is not your team. That is not your brand. That is the San Francisco 49ers brand. But now it appears that the conventional wisdom has shifted and athletes have platforms and they can use those platforms. And this has really cascaded through all sports, ranging from the complete embracing of social justice values at the NBA to the WNBA, where you've got a team that is basically protesting their ownership. We've had the Pac-10 players, that group of 400 students that were asking for actually a cut of revenues. Now
pretty
to
big chunk. Yeah.
Now to Trevor Lawrence and others going down the path to get the players a seat at the table. And I think you're right that seat at the table requires some type of organization, which sounds a lot like a players' union.
Yeah, it does. And honestly, in 2020, it's a little bit refreshing to see some rivals come together and work toward the common good. It's interesting to me that sports is where we're seeing that. And as far as that goes, the Big Ten yesterday is reported by Sports Illustrated and ESPN that they had made a decision to cancel the season. They were going to announce this week, and they were hoping other Power Five conferences would follow suit. The SEC reportedly was not there yet. And, of course, this is all, with unverified sources, or I guess unnamed sources. So it's difficult to tell at this moment how much is board writers during quarantine kind of flipping the narrative every week versus how much of it's really, really true. And we'll find out in the coming days. But what happens if a conference like the Big Ten cancels and other conferences or even one conference decides to play the season this fall?
Well, I think there's the reports about the Big Ten, and I've seen reports that the Big Ten presidents are sort of leading the charge to cancel the season, and it is based on new reports from the medical profession, mm-hmm. Research that suggests long-term ramifications of COVID-19. A little bit of a plug for our current project that we're calling Fanalytics University, where we talk about all things analytics, from all the way from fan analytics to on-field analytics. But our next class, which will be released in a couple of weeks, is going to focus on organizational decision-making. And in this case, I think when you think about the president of a university, you've got to think about what their utility function looks like, right? What are their, and so this is all information, this is decision making under imperfect information, so a lot of uncertainty in the world. And so what does it look like for a college president or a league as the pressure gets exerted downward? And so what is the upside of playing college football to that individual decision maker? Okay. So, I'll ask you, Doug, what is the upside to the University of Iowa's president saying, let's play college football?
I mean, it's a big win for the athletic department as far as money's concerned in keeping other programs alive. I think the value.
Okay, but let's say, what is the upside to that individual president?
I see.
And I think it's okay to pause because I don't know that there is one.
Yeah. So at an individual level, it's tough. It's
okay. Now, what's the downside to that president if they play?
The perception that if something were to happen, that there's blood on your hands.
Right. And I think that's a fair way to put it. It's dramatic, but it's completely fair.
Right.
And so what is the ideal way to make this decision? It's to go. I've heard folks, let's say really going off in the lack of leadership, I don't think anyone wants to lead on this one because there seems to be very little upside to play the season. There's a huge financial cost if we don't play the season. But if we do play the season and things go wrong, it's going to sound crass, but the reality is that's the career killer, right? You're pushing for it, and your organization has a lot of illness. Something goes wrong, that's a career killer. And so it's decision making under uncertainty with a lot of downside risk and potentially very little personal upside risk, upside benefits, organizational benefits. But at the end of the day, decision makers are probably, again, kind of crass in terms of really breaking this down, looking out for number one.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. Everything that's happened during coronavirus is kind of like a social study on people, because at an individual level, you know, a lot of people feel like they're not at risk and don't need to take precautions. But, you know, large numbers, it's a different story. And I think with college football, the individual level, I think players are willing to take on that risk because they know individually that they're likely to be fine. I think athletic directors, I think the higher up you go, the more they have to deal with those large numbers and the rule of large numbers. And so they're faced with a different decision than individuals who are in the situation, like these players who are coming in it together with this players association of sorts.
Yeah, that's fair. I can look at it, you can look at it, individuals can look at it, and you know, there's a lot of data out there. I mean, in some ways, there's too much data, right? Where it appears that the downside to a young, healthy person is relatively limited, though this latest report about long-term ramifications may change that perspective.
Wait till they find out the long-term ramifications of playing football, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know what? I mean,
that's another story.
Again, I want to sort of keep on track here because you're raising a lot of good points. You know, the issue has been raised, and this is true with school in general and college football, is turning off school or turning off football is not without costs, right? The issues ranging from depression and social isolation to, in the case of football, if we don't play and these kids stay home, is the relatively small risk of COVID-19 to a healthy 20-year-old athlete? How does that compare with the potential downside of being in a less structured, less supervised environment? You know, maybe the incidence of COVID is actually going to be greater for players if they're sort of just pushed back out into their home communities. One of the things you said before I went on a little bit of, you know, sort of went in a different direction, was what happens if one of these conferences cancels? How does that impact the other ones? And before I'm going to turn that question around on you, Doug. Okay. But before we get there, you know, let's think about what's happened so far. The NCAA canceled championships in Division II and Division III. Okay, the immediate media outcry or the Twitter outcry on that is, they don't care about athletes that make them money. They only want to shut things down when there isn't funding, finances are not impacted. Now, I think that's probably unfair, right? I'm guessing that decision was made in regards to the capabilities of the institutions in terms of testing and keeping the athletes safe. That followed by University of Connecticut deciding not to play football. Now, Connecticut put their decision out there in terms of being concerned about the safety and well-being of their players. The cynic in me wants to say, well, Connecticut was playing as an independent. Connecticut has also struggled a little bit in recent years. And so you could look at it, well, Connecticut looked at the likelihood of being able to put together a season and decided not to do it.
Right.
It was then followed by the MAC shutting down football and potentially all fall sports. I'm not sure. I'm guessing they've also
And the MAC, who had lost millions of dollars in potential earnings through playing Power Five schools and through the scheduling already. So it, again, it's a different decision for them as
and
well.
And I'm not gonna look it up, but let's say the average MAC team was bringing in, playing three games against Power Five conferences to start the season at payoffs of, let's call it $1.5 million per game. Mm-hmm. So those schools were going to take a hit of, you know, $4.5 to $5 million. I don't know what the average budget, like I said, I'm not going to look it up, but perhaps the average budget for a MAC football team is in the neighborhood of $10 million. And so suddenly their economic model kind of fell apart, and maybe the smart thing to do was to shut it down and avoid the variable cost of operating a program. So you have these different levels of organizations making decisions that end up causing them to shut the programs down, which then magnifies the pressure on the other leagues. When I look at the other leagues and I think about even the geographical differences in terms of how shut down California is in response to the virus, I would guess, even though it seems to be the Big Ten leading the charge, that the Pac-10 is the least likely to play. And so if the Pac-10 shuts down, then I think the Big Ten shuts down. And then I think it's over. So, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, like on the one hand, I can see that. But on the other hand, again, if we're looking at the decision makers, like for conferences like the ACC and SEC, if that were to happen, if the Pac-12 and Big Ten were to shut down, all of a sudden, it's like more spotlight on you and more exposure from a recruiting standpoint for these schools. If they were to play, if the SEC schools were to play and the Big Ten weren't, it almost would, that whole, it just means more branding of the SEC would mean a little bit more from a recruiting standpoint. And I don't know, I could see it happen. I could see a couple conferences playing while others don't, and it would turn into a whole nother situation with transfers and, it's just really, we've never seen anything like this, and it's hard to imagine how it's going to unfold. But wouldn't that be a crazy scenario?
Oh, got it.
If we had SEC ACC season or something of that nature.
Talking about bold decision making, absolutely. I mean, and maybe it's more the, you know, I would tend to think it's maybe the Big 12 looks at this and they, you know, in terms of where they play and sort of the density of population. And again, I guess, you know, Big 12 areas in terms of, you know, parts of Texas have gotten hammered. But yeah, you could almost imagine that this is a way to really put yourself out there in a incredibly, soak up all of the attention. Very, you know, as a marketer, very strong, very powerful move. But the risk aversion of the executive class is something that I can't quite see them overcoming. But it would be that would be the most fascinating way that this could play out.
Yeah, no doubt in my mind. And again, another interesting aspect of this is all along the narrative has been that these players may be endangered by these greedy athletic departments. All of a sudden, the players are speaking up for themselves, using Twitter as a means of communication and saying, look, we want to play. We want to take on that risk. All along, my recommendation, or I guess my thoughts have been that from an optic standpoint, the NCAA, if they are to play, should put it in the hands of the players, should allow them to determine whether or not they play, allow them to opt in, opt out. You know, the players speaking up, it feels like a last-ditch effort. It feels like there really was some truth to reports that this whole thing was going down. It'll be interesting to see what becomes of it, because the optics change with that, and now it's the NCAA and these conferences are making decisions that are negatively affecting these players in their own view.
Yeah, it's, you know, one of the things that, at least in the back of my mind, we're living in the middle of this, is how are sports going to change following this pandemic? And I think you're right that the players are going to be, well, the players have more power than they've ever had. And this has been a growing trend going back to the likenesses and the change where players could be paid for their, essentially for their personal brands. Now we've got safety issues, and the players are definitely going to need a seat at the table if this is going to proceed. I suppose you could look at this in one way to limit the amount of power that the players gain. Because look, the idea that you're going to form a players union to give the players a voice at the table, this is a fundamental game changer for college sports. I mean, so, you know, we could look at what's going to happen on the other side of this. And there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of moving parts. You know, the MAC conferences, you think about running a college athletic program. And again, I'm going to take a sort of a guess. I'm not going to look it up. Let's say it costs $40 or $50 million to run an athletic program in the MAC. If essentially you turn off the revenues for a year, how do the universities sustain that athletic program? Are there significant cutbacks to that? In which case, on the other side of this, and this could be true at the SEC and the Power Five schools as well, are these athletic programs basically smaller on the other side? And are players now formally represented by some kind of union? Do the players, as a key stakeholder in this, have much more of a say and much more power? And so do college sports on the other side of this, are they smaller with a greater voice for players?
Yeah, and I think last week we used the word or the term slippery slope when it comes to the NCAA or these conferences' view of giving players any sort of union power. And I think for them, they'll view this as leveraging the situation and the power that they have now to gain a little bit more power. And then once they have it, it's going to be, we want to be paid, and we want to be paid like professional athletes, like the athletes that are earning you millions of dollars. And like we've talked about before, these guys have a free workforce. They don't want that. At the same time, it feels inevitable regardless. So it feels like college football is going to change in big ways in college sports as a whole.
Yeah, let's look ahead a little bit. So college basketball, when first practice of college basketball happens, was it like Halloween? Is that right?
What, games or?
Practice, Midnight Madness. When's Midnight Madness?
Oh, yeah. Midnight. I mean, they're already on campus practicing together, working out and stuff. But okay. Yeah, I guess officially Midnight Madness is a little bit later in the fall, typically. Of course, we don't know what the scheduling will be like this year, nor if there will be a Midnight Madness with an empty crowd. Right. Regardless, it starts mid-football season.
I mean, basketball is a fall sport as well, with games occurring in late November and December.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know why we would think that those are going. If football is canceled, I don't think we're playing basketball in the. I don't think we're playing basketball in the fall. And so are we looking at, and in the case of basketball, we've already seen a lot of shift towards, some players signing directly with the G League.
Oh, yeah.
What is this? You know, I think college basketball is more vulnerable than college football at the highest level. And so how does this, like I say, does this fundamentally change college sports where it's smaller organizations in the case of basketball? It's significantly less talent, right? Let's go play in the G League. Let's go play in Europe moving forward.
I think that's a great point, Mike. I think basketball is much more vulnerable because there are those alternatives for players, whereas with football, they don't have a choice. They've got to go to college for 3 years if they want to play professional football and make money from it. Basketball, early in the summer, we talked about the G League a good bit and how that may change the game.
Interrupt you in that. You said they got to play football for 3 years. If one of the things that comes out of this is formal recognition of a players' union, do you think that rule holds up, that you have to play for 3 years?
No, I don't. And so that's why I think there's it could be viewed as a slippery slope on behalf of the NCAA and behalf of these conferences. They don't want those players to have the power to make that determination.
Yeah. I mean, and there's other things that are sort of in the play. I mean, look, I'll put my prediction out there. I don't think they're going to play college football. I think by the time this, by the time we air this episode tomorrow, by the time we drop it on August 11th, that they'll be well on the way of kicking this at least back to, let's say, the spring. I think, you know, hope is going to hope will be eternal in all this. And look, maybe the plan will be to play college sports, basketball and football in a spring schedule. I see that as almost inevitable, not for any real reasons of logic, but almost more for the mood of, you know, the mood of the media and sort of the way, let's say, organizational decisions are made in terms of what is good for upper level management. All that being said, how does this affect the NFL? You know, you got any thoughts on that?
Well, first off, if there's a season in the spring, you know, usually the combine's in the spring, the draft soon after, early summer or late spring. And so immediately that's the first thing that comes to mind. As far as the long term is concerned, potentially scouting players could look a lot different if you're able to take them earlier. Players like Trevor Lawrence pretty much would have been a number one pick out of high school if that were an option. But the same could be said for a guy like Jacob Eason, who ended up going late. And so, you know, you would lose, if the players were to get this kind of players association power and leverage, I'm sure they would want to be able to choose when they go pro, and that would change the scouting of the NFL. They'd have less sample size to judge from, but they would have also more years of these great athletes. There's been several, especially at the running back position, guys that are in their prime in college, and those years are lost for the NFL. So I don't know. You could see a reemergence of the running back position. How about that? That'd be wild.
Yeah, talk about unintended consequences.
Look,
you're dead on. I mean, it is one of the fascinating things about the differences in these sports is that, you know, do you really want to take a quarterback number one based on a high school performance? You know, like in basketball, you get to see how the top athletes can, you know, perform against each other in AAU competitions.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing in the Olympics in basketball. Those kids are playing international, you know, championship ball.
But, well, you know, so maybe the decision-making of the quarterbacks, you know, you want a little bit more information to make that play. When you're talking about pure athleticism of a running back or perhaps a wide receiver, you could definitely imagine that they would be willing to take some of those kids right out of high school.
Yeah, so I think it could fundamentally change the NFL. I think it could bring, honestly, in my opinion, the NFL has lost its prominence in the last few years. And I'm not saying it's not still number one, but not by as much. And it feels like it's on the wrong trajectory. If all of a sudden...
Okay, well, then let me give you a scenario here.
Yeah.
College football doesn't play. The NFL now has Saturdays open to them.
Yeah, they're playing Saturdays.
They're playing primetime on Saturday night. They're playing Sundays. They're playing Thursdays. Yeah. I don't know, maybe high school sports are going to get shut down, so they'll play Friday nights as well, potentially.
NFL, it'll be more like the NBA as far as the scheduling.
Okay, so the NFL now in serious competition with, you know, basically running at least really strong on the weekends. The NFL now in direct competition with the NBA playoffs, with the Major League Baseball playoffs, and with the presidential election.
Debates. Yeah, it's a different scenario for the NFL now because typically, I mean, the NBA playoffs is a big deal in for a lot of sports fans, and that's typically not going on right now. Baseball is going to be going on later into the football season. And so they're competing with quite a bit more as far as professional sports are going. But taking college out of the mix, I think the biggest obstacle to entry for fans going with NFL football is college football. A lot of fans have their appetite satisfied on Saturday, and they don't feel that need on Sunday as much. Sunday can be where they get the yard work done or where they spend time with the family. Taking college football out of the mix, those same fans may very well, even if they're just so loyal to their college team, they're going to be watching those former college players on their respective teams.
And let me make a point, because we're doing this broadcast from the Atlanta suburbs, that some folks may not fully appreciate the different power of college football in different regions of the country.
Yeah.
And where I grew up in Chicago, let's be real. I'm an Illini guy, but it's not like Illini football Saturdays are the dominant sporting event in that region. But here in everyone's waiting for the Bears on Sunday, but down here in Atlanta, the Georgia Bulldogs playing on a Saturday is perhaps a bigger deal than the Atlanta Falcons playing on a Sunday. And so does this change that equation throughout the South? Which, kind of goes back to this notion of, does the SEC, are they the last man standing in terms of putting the product out there? That they've got this they got a really strong brand, but geographically in this southeastern region, it's a monster. And so, mm-hmm. You want to protect that brand while minimizing your downside risk of appearing to not protect the players.
Right. And I think it's interesting you say appearing to not protect the players, because I've seen even floated out by Trevor Lawrence this notion that there is a risk with playing. There also is a risk with not playing, as far as the safety of these players being in their home communities, not having the access to excellent health care and testing, and that it could be worse for them. That is kind of a way of thinking that I have not seen floated around until recently in this kind of last-ditch effort for college athletics. And by the way, that last-ditch effort has been very much rooted in the South and these conferences where it does mean a little bit more.
Okay, anything else on your mind this Monday morning, Doug?
Basketball's heating up. I'm excited about that. The Lakers have fallen off here recently. Celtics have gotten a little hot. And anyway, for our NBA fans, I'll be keeping up with that. I'll probably write a little something about it pretty soon here. Our new Fanalytics U dropped last week. For those of you keeping up with it, it was about in-game decision-making. Baseball season is quietly still alive after much controversy early on. They're still doing their thing. And NHL's going here. So anyway, the professional sports leagues are staying afloat. College is just a whole different monster. Well, it seems like we'll see in the coming days what's going to happen this fall.
And let's stay there for a second. I mean, it's hard to really come up with conclusions about how these professional leagues are doing, because the only signal we have is TV ratings, and it's difficult to compare TV ratings. It's difficult to compare to assess whether a TV rating is good or not, frankly. The latest reports are that the ratings are down a little bit for the NBA versus where the league was at before they stopped play. There was obviously a peak when they started, and it's dropped off a little bit. But you can counter-argue some of this by saying, people tend to watch less TV in August. But the reality is, look, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and who the hell knows what the baseline should be. But it is safe to say that the TV ratings for the baseball, hockey, and for basketball are, let's just call it mixed. And I don't know, I sort of anticipated that at least the NBA would be really strong, just because the NBA had set this up so they were going straight into the playoffs. I mean, it's kind of a play-in to get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so they should have that real level of excitement. But, you know, again, from my perspective, this is just, we're in uncharted territory. But it is interesting to see the level of fan interest expressed through TV ratings.
No doubt. And to me, like you're saying, the NBA is perfect setup. I mean, taking out those bottom eight teams makes it so the top 22 teams are competitive with each other almost every night. I mean, I've seen more close games, which is what you want when you're watching a sporting event, especially when you don't particularly have a team. I've seen more close and exciting games in that setting. But like you're saying, mixed ratings, you know, you'll see an article saying that they're great, and you'll see an article saying they're bad because of social or political reasons usually. But the bottom line is they are mixed. And I think there's just something about it just – I think for the whole, like, not for me, but for a lot of people, it's not as exciting. It doesn't feel like a real season. It feels like they're just trying to get out of it what they can, and it's not the same. People are less interested.
Absolutely true, and that's I think that's probably a good way to end this week, that all of sports in 2020 is going to feel like there should be an asterisk next to it, right? That these were exhibition seasons. So there's got to be something, you know, there's got to be something special. You know, I don't know, if you win a championship, let's say your team wins the championship in the NBA bubble. Well, guess what? No one would have been, if it's the Lakers or the Clippers, right? No one would have been at the arena watching it, or at bars locally watching it, and then spilling out into the streets. So it's going to have a different, it's going to have a different feel to it. What that means long term, you know, probably means nothing, to be honest with you, right? I think everyone is looking at this stuff of, this is a special situation. We're going to see how it evolves. Long term meaning, don't know.
Yeah, and last word on my end. You're the analyst. I'm the fan. As a fan, there's no asterisk to me if it's my team. If Georgia wins the national championship, it's for real. If my rival does, different story.
I get that 100% because I mentioned, if I'm an Illini fan and they pull off a championship, I couldn't care less if they play the seasons, you know, in some sort of underwater arena. Doesn't matter to me. I'm counting that. Stay classy, San Diego.